In this episode, we're diving into how people make decisions to buy from you and your clients and what you can do to influence those decisions.
This is JFDI with the Two Lauras, the podcast where we chat about all things related to working in social media, and we share tips, advice, ideas and inspiration to help you freelance social media managers with your marketing and your business. Today on the show, we're talking about buying decisions. How do we make them? What influences us when we're thinking about spending money? And how can you, as a social media manager, make sure that your content helps the right people to make a decision to work with you or buy from your clients? Now, I think the way that people buy has changed quite dramatically over the last few years. So I think that that might be quite a good place to start, don't you?
Yeah. It's changed considerably, isn't it?
Massively, yeah.
Hugely.
Dramatically. How many more words can we use to describe this?
I think by and large, it's social media, isn't it? That's been the biggest disruptor.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, I'm talking purely about my own buying habits. So should we start with that? Should we dive into...
Yeah. Well, I know that you do this as well, but like I search for products that I want to buy or that I'm interested in, like getting ideas or you know, different inspiration for all the time, mostly on Instagram, personally. And I think I've spoken about this on a podcast before, but I recently did up my kitchen and all the ideas, like the paint colour, the lights I wanted, the handles, like everything came from searching on Instagram. And I know people do that on Pinterest, TikTok, all of those places, but for me, it's mostly Instagram. And like, just before we started recording this podcast, somebody bought our social media manager's toolkit. And when people buy that, we asked them why they bought it. And they said they searched on Instagram for freelance social media managers and we came up. So I feel like, you know, there's evidence that people are buying differently because they're searching for things differently, aren't they? Like, we're not just using Google to search anymore, are we?
No, God, no. I use social media to search more than I use Google for everything. And whether it be searching for a specific product or whether it's searching for inspiration, which then leads me to making a buying decision, it's kind of either or.
I feel like when we're searching, in the past, we would search for things and we might see blogs about things, might see videos about things, and they would all be quite, you know, it would be subtle. Whereas now we see sales content in front of us every single time we open our phone. We don't just see adverts on TV. Like literally everything is basically an advert, isn't it? We're seeing sales content from all the brands we follow all day, every day. So it's not such a shock to the system to be sold to.
Yeah, if you think about it, you'd only ever have seen, you know, if you're thinking, say, food, you'd only ever see food really on a TV advert or when you were in the supermarket or I guess if you saw somebody else eating it in their packed lunch at school or what have you.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that was it really, whereas now brands are everywhere.
Mm.
You're seeing them constantly. It's like that subliminal messaging is constant.
Yeah. And that kind of helps us make decisions in a totally different way
than we
ever used to, because we're probably not even realizing we're making those decisions.
Yeah.
To fancy that thing to eat and all of that stuff.
And you then kind of add a new layer to that, or not new, another layer to that, in that you have influencers recommending all these brands or products, services, whatever it may be. You know, and influencers have always been around, you know, so back to your packed lunch at school, an influencer to a child could be the cool kid who's eating or drinking the Sunny D when you're at school, and therefore you're influenced to buy it. So I'm not just talking about, you know, influence has always been around.
That's like my whole kitchen thing. In the past, I would have had to go to my friends' houses to have kitchen inspiration or a kitchen showroom. Whereas now you can just open your phone, search for kitchens, and you are getting inspiration, but you're being influenced, aren't you, by those big accounts because of what they're doing and because of, you know, different products they're using maybe. So you're being influenced by people you know, by going into their houses, by them showing you things they've brought, by them, you know, sharing them on social media as well, but also people you've never met and we trust them.
Yeah, and it's weird, isn't it? It's
weird.
So weird.
Yeah.
Like there's this sun cream that's doing the rounds on TikTok. I can't remember the brand now because I should try and get a kickback. because obviously I'm an influencer. And it's everywhere. Like every other TikTok I see is people pushing this new face sun cream thing. And it just makes you think, oh my God, like I've got to buy this. And then when I stop myself, because I am a sucker for this kind of influence, I'm just like, who even is this 12-year-old telling me that I need to have this sun cream? And my face is never going to look like hers because she's 12. You know, I sometimes do have to give myself a bit of a slap because it's literally everywhere. Like, clearly it's not in that impactful because I can't remember the name of it, but it's everywhere.
But that is interesting, isn't it? Because if one of your friends had bought that product and one of your friends told you about that sun cream, you would immediately trust their opinion about it far more over like a random person on social media.
But I don't know, you know, because, and I think that this is really interesting because I think, so if my friends, you know, say like a WhatsApp group said, oh, just bought this new sun cream, it's great. I'd go, oh, okay, great. You know, I maybe retain that information somewhere in my brain. And then maybe when I was next in Boots, if I saw it, I'd go, oh, that's the one blah, blah uses. Oh, I might buy it. Like there's much, it obviously works and obviously has an influence. And if it's a product that I'm interested in buying, then it will have an influence on me. But when it comes to social media and this influencer campaigns where it's like everywhere you look, you see this sun cream, there's something that makes me just, like something comes over me and I just have to buy it there and then.
Yeah, FOMO.
Yeah, their influence seems to be so much stronger. And obviously that's just talking about sun cream. You know, if you're talking about higher investment, then I would 100% say you wanted your drive tarmac. I would totally look for my friend, local friends' recommendations rather than what I've seen on TikTok.
Yeah.
So it obviously is all relevant, but all relative, should I say. But it is. It's just so interesting. So not only have you got the brands pushing their content everywhere, you've also then got the influencers pushing the brands everywhere.
Yeah. And if you then throw in retargeting ads and you've seen that influencer, you've gone onto the website and then you're getting retargeted with ads constantly reminding you about this thing, like that plays a massive part on your buying decision as well, doesn't it? Because you like, you feel like everyone's got it. So there must be something that you're missing out on because you're seeing it everywhere. It's like it's on TikTok, you're opening Facebook, you're saying an ad, you know, it's hard to get away from.
Yeah. No wonder we're exhausted.
Totally.
And no wonder I'm skinned. Yeah. So I think those retargeting ads are a killer. They're so effective.
Totally. And I think as well, we're kind of surrounded by options these days. Whereas before, if we were going to try and buy sun cream, we would have to go into Boots, for example, and look on the shelves and those would be our options. Now, if you wanted sun cream, probably isn't the best example, but now if you were thinking about sun cream, you would be surrounded by options because you'd have these influencers on TikTok, you've had the ads that are being served to you because of retargeting. That would then put you into another audience to be shown other different types of sun cream, and it would be on all of the different platforms. You might have actually accidentally signed up to get 10% off, so then it's in your inbox, in your email, and then you drive out and you see the ads that were there anyway, but because you've been seeing it on social, you see those ads, don't you? It's like when you want to get pregnant, everywhere you look, there's pregnant people, but they were already there. But those things kind of make you look at these things, don't they? It's really weird.
Yeah, it's quite relentless, actually, when you think of it like that. And the difference, I guess, we have nowadays is 20 years ago, you'd be watching Coronation Street, the ads would come on, and that would be the point that you would get up and you would go and have a cup of tea. Or
if you were like my granddad would always mute the adverts because my nan was so easily influenced that anything that was on the adverts, he would always say that she'd go and buy and then he'd be skint. So if she had social media, they literally would be skint. But yeah, people used to just mute the ads. Can't you? Like on social media, you could mute the trolls, but you can't mute the ads.
Yeah, well, exactly. And, you know, yes, there are ways that you can take ads out of your, you know, it's like Spotify, you can pay for not having the ads, and Netflix and... Mm. You know, there are ways that you can kind of avoid ads on some platforms, but when it comes to social media in particular, you can't mute the ads. You can't, like, get rid of them. So they're everywhere. And for us as marketers.
But that's a good thing. That's a good thing for us.
100%. Yeah, it is a good thing.
So bearing in mind all the things we've kind of just talked about, how do you think that actually makes an impact in terms of like what social media managers should do, how people are using those platforms? Because obviously that's kind of, people are using platforms to search for things. That's going to obviously have a big impact on their buying decision. So in terms of a social media manager, what should they be doing, changing, et cetera, in terms of their content to make sure that they are kind of tapping into that?
Well, yeah, so they just need to optimize all of their content for search, don't they? They need to really clear on their keywords, which, you know, will have to be tested and refined. And I always, with my clients, the first thing I did was went and I looked at the keywords people were using on Google. And I kind of said to them, can you run me a report? Let me know how people are finding you. And that kind of gave me a bit of a steer then on some keywords, terms that I wanted to be using in social content. So I would start there in terms of creating your content to come up in search, but also to make sure it stands out. Like we've just discussed, we've got so much content, and I'm sure there's probably a stat of the billions of pieces of content we see in an hour or something like that, which maybe we should have probably found. But we see so much content. It's so important that you have to optimize your content, that not only is it going to appear in search, but it's going to stand out, going to make someone click and continue reading and finding out more about that product or service.
Yeah, and I think in terms of those keywords, like, yes, definitely try and get a report, but also even just from your own like thinking, what would people search for if they were trying to buy from your client? Would they be searching for the brand name? Would they be searching for the product name? Would they be searching for terms that are, you know, really related to that product? Or would they be searching for something a bit wider? I remember seeing somebody a long time ago talking about if they were selling battery packs and they wanted, for example, to sell it to people who are festival goers, would festival goers be searching for battery packs, or would they be searching for how to charge your phone at a festival? Do you know what I mean? Those two things are very different. So what are people actually searching for in that kind of way, and how can you put that into your content? And I think maybe also like kind of going at it from like pretending you are in the audience and going and doing those searches and what comes up. Because if you think about it, if we do a search and we find something we like, but then we go on that brand's page and it's dead, like they haven't posted for ages, you know, the content's a bit crappy, that will immediately have an impact on our opinion. Whether rightly or wrongly, it will have an impact on whether or not we trust that brand. Like I see ads all the time on Instagram, where I mostly hang out these days, for things that I'm like, oh, this looks brilliant. And then I click, they don't even have an Instagram account. They're only on Facebook. That instantly, you know, raises my red flags. And it's like, why aren't they on here?
Yeah, it gives you a,
And then I don't trust them. So it's like, you need to make sure that if you are a social media manager and people might be searching for you on different platforms, is there content there? Are you directing them somewhere else, or is it completely dead? And also, like, we might see competitors when we're searching. So how are we going to stand out from those competitors so that people don't go over to the competitor instead of coming to you?
Yeah, well, I think
I stumped her then. Like, she was just like, oh my God.
I think the speed someone makes the decision, though, like you just said, if you click through on an ad and there's no account, or like I find myself doing this, I see an ad or see someone recommended or something, you know, say on an Instagram story or something, and I will click through and I will take an immediate, it must be a split second decision, and I often go, oh no, because what some a piece of content that I can see in that top nine or on their bio, something, if it doesn't speak to me, if it doesn't make me think this is for me, maybe they use some really crappy mompreneur or something, and I'll go, and I will straight away go off, you know, so, which is fine. Like, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Although if the ad has pulled me in, but then something else is pushing me away, then there's a disconnect slightly.
Yeah. But
I think we have to be really, really so clear on what it is people are actually looking for and what they want you to be showing up as, because of how quick they make those decisions. Like, it's like instant.
And what we've just said about how we like would click through from an ad, there's a statistic I saw a while ago that says that consumers are 155% more likely to go and search for a brand after they see an ad. So they might see your ad, then they go and search for the brand. But if you, they then search and you then come up against your competitor, how does your content stand out from them? Because yes, they've seen your ad, but then what happens next in that kind of, you know, funnel almost for when they're searching? How do you, what's the differentiator between you and your ad and their search results and the competitor? I think you need to think about that as well.
Well, and especially if your competitor is a bigger known brand or has a bigger known reputation, because you're automatically on a back foot. And I think, you know, differentiating yourself and making, like we just said, being so clear on the small nuances in terms of who you want to speak to, your tone of voice. You want it to attract the right people and you also want it to repel the wrong people. You know, it's like the whole, and I only used it as an example, but that, like that whole mompreneur thing. I don't like that term. That would turn me away. But for lots of people, they like that term. So if that's true to that brand, then that's working. But actually, if they've not really given those kind of things a thought, and maybe they have just put mompreneur because their competitor says mompreneur, actually they, but they don't really believe it themselves, but it's because their competitor is doing it. Actually, owning the difference, and the difference is that there are people who don't like that term and you could mop those people up. So you've just got to be very true to yourself and don't, and look at how are you different to other people? What is it that brand kind of brand values, I guess, that is different to the competitors? Because that is, that could be the reason why someone hangs around on your content or goes to your website or buys from you over and above your other competitors. So you've got to be confident to own those differences, don't you?
Yeah, and I think there's a lot to be said for looking in the comments on your competitors' content more than looking at their content, because often in the comments people will ask questions, and if you see questions that are coming up a lot and your content answers those questions without them having to ask, you know, then that immediately kind of sets you apart. If they're, if they're all complaining about one thing and your product does something the opposite, then that's like, that's an amazing differentiator. So I think definitely, you know,
or there's the comments of people saying, this looks great, but how do I use it? Or how do I make a difference? Or when will I see it? Like, whatever questions they're asking, that's a content opportunity for you as the competitor to go and create content that answers all of their questions, especially if that particular brand isn't doing that, because then they'll see you as the brand that's really useful and answering their questions and providing valuable content. And these are all quite broad sweeping statements, because obviously it's going to be very different to whether you're B2B, to B2C, to product-based, service-based. There's lots of obviously different ways to approach this, but 100% kind of looking at the comments and the reviews, you know, Google reviews, those kind of things for competitors is a really good way to enable you to be able to create content that answers your customers' problems and builds trust, which is what you want.
Yeah, definitely. And I think on like the whole buying decision kind of journey, if you like, whereas different brands need to kind of differentiate themselves for different reasons, we need to remember that people buy for different reasons. So sometimes you can speak to all of those reasons in your content, and other times you need to be really specific and speak to one reason, one person, one message. And so your whole content strategy needs to kind of take into account all of those things. So like, just for example, if you saw on your competitors' comments they were asking a question about, I don't know, it being environmentally friendly, for example, one of your pieces of content could just be about it being environmentally friendly. But another piece of your content might be about all of the reasons to buy, and one of them is that it's environmentally friendly. So it's like you kind of need to, sometimes you just go deep on one reason to buy, whereas other times you need to go a bit broader. You need to kind of think about all of that. And also, I think it's about like consideration periods. Like, for example, with your client, like it takes a lot, for somebody to decide to buy one of the things that one of your clients sell, because it's so blooming expensive.
Yeah.
And there's consideration periods based on like price, based on how time consuming something might be to do, or awkward to buy, or, you know, whether they need to have conversations with their families to make decisions. There's so many things that come into play when it comes to buying decisions and consideration periods, and you need to think about all of those as well in your content, don't you?
Yeah, which is exactly why lots of people go wrong when they just talk about something once. You know, that repetition of content, and that can be repurposed in different ways, but still that repetition of message maybe is probably would have been a better term.
Yeah.
It's so important. Like, my consideration period for my clients, I say it's a year, but actually I reckon it's probably 2 years now. So my content is constantly having to keep these people warm and nurture them, but yet remind them of all the kind of USPs, why they need to buy from them. Because the last thing we want them to do is we've kind of nurtured them for 18 months and then they fuck off, they bugger off to a competitor.
You are allowed to swear on your own podcast, you know.
I know, but that, you know, the F word's quite a strong one. Yeah, so I think, you know, trying to make sure you're repeating that message. And although you might feel like you're repeating yourselves to your audience, they possibly haven't seen it the first time, or they saw the content the first time, but they took something else from it. You know, it was,
yeah,
they didn't particularly take that one point about them being, you know, the, I don't know, I can't think of an example, but and then when you say it again, you say it slightly differently, and that time it kind of sinks in. Or that time is the time that they're sat next to their wife and they say, oh, you know what, I keep meaning to talk to you about this. I think these people are the right people to buy from. You know, so you have to kind of rinse and repeat messages, and you might feel that that's awkward. And even your clients might go, why do you keep talking about this? You've talked about it once, because they don't understand that. And it's down to you when you're thinking of your content strategy. Like, what do we need to keep talking about here? What are our main messages that we need to keep getting out there to help people when they have these longer, especially longer consideration periods? But to be honest, the length of it doesn't really matter. But how can you keep saying this same message multiple times? And then you need to weave that into your content.
Yeah, and I think quite often as social media managers, we kind of focus on that whole building trust, showing our reputation, showing that we're experts, showing quality, all of that kind of stuff in our content. But we don't necessarily always remember to put in our content things that will help people to actually make a decision. Because, you know, people can think and think and think and think and think, but that's not going to pay the bills. People, like, making a decision to either buy or not buy is where we, like, the end result of where we want to get to. And if we're not using content to help people to make that decision, and we're just constantly nurturing them, just constantly telling them that, yeah, we're the best, blah, 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 but we're not saying, this is how you buy, this is why you should buy now, then they're just going to keep sitting on the fence and just thinking about it.
Yeah, sometimes people just need to be told what to do, don't they?
Yeah, totally. You know,
sometimes people are looking for someone to say, it's okay to buy this now. And also, I think another thing is, if people don't, this does depend. Obviously, if it's just buying a jumper, it's slightly easier to understand. But some people, they don't know the process. Like, what happens? Like, with my clients, we have to kind of say to them, this is the process of you being interested in this product, and then you kind of sailing away in the sunset 12, 18 months later. And people just don't know. They don't know what that process is. And that will be the same to a lot of businesses. And they need to kind of have that slight hand holding to make them know that it's okay. You know, it's like, it could be that you need a dental treatment, but you don't know what to expect. So you're kind of putting off booking it because you don't really know what's going to happen. So you're hesitant. Whereas if you put content out that shows what happens the moment someone walks in the door, it will help people to go, okay, I'm ready to make that decision now.
Yeah, that's why you'll see so many kind of online marketers in their, like, video sales letters, for example, saying, click the button below. When you click that button below, you need to put in your payment details and you'll be asked this information. You'll be asked this information, because it's taking away that, like, what's hidden behind the door, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like when you're filling in a survey and it doesn't tell you how many questions there are or how long it's going to take you. You do a couple and you're like, I don't know how much longer this is going to take me. So you leave. because there's just too much uncertainty. And if you take away that uncertainty, people are much more likely to make a decision to actually continue to buy. And I feel like we need to spend more time trying to do that. That's why unboxing videos work so well, isn't it? Because you see what's going to happen. That box is going to arrive in your house. This is what's going to happen when you open it. It's going to have, you know, these kind of sweets in it that are like a little present. You're going to get a nice little card. And it's that whole experience of watching someone do that makes you feel like you've already done it.
Yeah.
So it builds that trust at the same time and you feel much more confident to take that next step.
Yeah, you just basically need to take away any kind of hesitation because that's what's going to stop someone from actually completing that purchase.
Definitely. And I think there's a few things as a social media manager that you need to think about. If you're working with clients who are selling things, which I would imagine 99% of you are, in your content strategy, you need to make sure that you are doing all the things we've already spoken about. You need to show that social proof. You need to show that, you know, why is this brand the best? Help people to make that decision. And if your client doesn't have what we would class as an irresistible offer to get people to make that decision to buy or not buy, you need to be working with them to help them to kind of craft it into an irresistible offer. And we've got loads of information on how to do that in the Social Media Manager's Toolkit, by the way. But you also need to kind of think about how can I use like a really strategic launch strategy, promotion strategy, to get somebody from point A to point B where they buy in my content. Because we always say that people, you know, it's not a social media manager's job to get somebody to buy something, but it is your job to get them to make the decision to come off of that social platform and go over to the website where they can buy or become a lead so your client can sell to them. That is your job, to get them into that buying state. And a launch strategy is probably the best way that you can do that, the easiest way.
Yeah, and just to reiterate, because I know you just said that, because a lot of people, I think, hear the term launch strategy and go, oh no, my clients don't launch anything. It's promotional periods. It's a promotional period, which every brand, in theory, should do. It's like, what product or what service are we going to be promoting next, the next month, the next 6 weeks, the next year, whatever it may be. So yes, we use the term launch strategy, but we're referring to promotional periods as well. It's much the same thing.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I think a lot of social media marketers can do, especially if they're trained, is by making sure that they're using retargeting ads. Then customers are up to 70% more likely to buy your product when you're actually using retargeting ads. So I think that's crazy. And I know it works for me.
Well, that's like what we were talking about earlier, isn't it? Where you're on TikTok looking at a video and then you open Facebook or Instagram and it's like that product's just constantly in front of you, isn't it? If something's constantly in front of you, you're like, obviously this product was meant for me.
Yeah.
So I can see why it's that high.
Yeah. And like we touched on earlier, you can't turn them off. I suppose you can hide them actually, can't you? But, you know.
Yeah, but you're still going to see messages about similar products, aren't they? It's going to be in your feed.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, that's it. I hope it was useful. I hope it's given you some food for thought in terms of what you can incorporate into your social media strategies to enable people to make those correct buying decisions and to buy from you and all your clients.
So if you are listening to this thinking, oh, hang on a minute, I'm not really sure that I know how to do this for my clients, don't worry, we've got your back. We cover all of this in the Social Media Manager's Toolkit. We help you to craft an irresistible offer for them and for yourself. We help you with launch strategies, or as Laura's just explained, promotional strategies, in terms of all of the content that you would need to kind of get somebody to that buying decision, including bringing them into your account in the first place and actually getting, you know, visibility on the brand. And we teach you how to create retargeting ads and normal ads in our Ads Manager Academy program. So every single thing that we've spoken about in this episode is covered in the Social Media Manager's Toolkit, and we're there to kind of help you to get this done. We'll pop the link for that in the show notes, or you can just go to thetwolauras.com/toolkit, and we will be back same time, same place next week. We'll see you then.
Au revoir.
Auf Wiedersehen.